history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some incredible stories around you if you just take the time to ask and listen. Each week we visit with veterans of our World War II generation. We want them to know that we appreciate their service and sacrifice, that we're not going to forget the price that was paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The gentleman we're going to meet today has quite a story to tell. 91-year-old Al Peguero of Merced, California, and a lifelong resident of Merced, except for a few years that he was across the Pacific with the U.S. Navy on a decorated cruiser known as the USS Reno. We're going to hear about that. But Al, I want to hear about Merced. Now it's a big city. It's got a University of California and all kinds of things going on. But when you're growing up here in the 1930s, what was Merced like?
Oh, real quiet. And everybody was poor and happy. But you know one thing about them? We were afraid of the law. We were afraid of a policeman or a school teacher tell you to do something, you did it. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the kids do what they want and they get sued and they get one thing or the other if they don't do it.
It's a different world.
It's a different world, right. And you know, in those days, even an uncle would tell you, hey, you do this or do that, you go ahead and do it.
You respected authority.
Right. And nowadays, they'll tell the guy to go, you know, go somewhere else. Yeah. We grew up in downtown Merced on 15th and J. There wasn't much going on. I went to school at Galen Clark School, which is a small school now, if you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Galen Clark. And then I went to John Muir and then to Merced High. And then the war broke out on my second year. The war broke out. I quit school to go to work to make money. There was a lot of people asking for work. I mean, for help, you know.
Mm-hmm. And because a lot of guys went to the service and they needed someone to replace them on those
right.
jobs.
In fact, my first job was help build the Japanese labor camp they had over there by the fairgrounds.
Really?
They made some real quick homes to put those people away, but that was the wrong thing.
The Merced Assembly Center.
Right.
There's a memorial to it now at the fairgrounds here in Merced.
Right. And that's what my first job, and I was only 17 then, and they put me to work, helped build those buildings.
What do you remember about that? Because it was almost your birthday. Your birthday is the 15th of December, but right. The 7th of December, the world changed. How did you find out about that?
I was working on my jalopy. I had a Model A jalopy that my dad gave me, and I was painting it. And I heard over the radio that we got attacked in Pearl Harbor. And everybody kept saying, well, where's Pearl Harbor? We didn't even know where Pearl Harbor was. The kids that I knew, our world was Fresno, Merced, Las Banas, and Modesto, and over here by the foothills, that was our home. We never knew nothing about Pearl Harbor or anything like that.
You probably even remember Yosemite before it was crawling with tourists from all over the world.
Well, I had an uncle working for the railroad. They go to Yosemite, mm-hmm. and they had a camp for them to live in up in the hills, El Portel.
Yeah.
My uncle and my grandmother lived there, so we had to go visit them, which were real nice, you know.
I know you had a big family, had a couple brothers and three sisters. Do you remember having some ambitions, some dreams that, hey, when I grow up, I'm going to do this?
No, we never thought about that. Remember, we was happy to have a bicycle and get around. No, we never thought about the future at all.
Hmm. So Pearl Harbor happens.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor.
And I'm sure in going to school here in Merced that you had some classmates who were Japanese American.
Yes, and they were real good people. They got a raw deal. In fact, I still know a few of them that are still here, and they're real nice people that got just a raw deal.
And here you're over here. You finally have a job to help to support the family.
Yeah.
And then now you have the perspective of what that job was and what it meant for the Japanese Americans.
Yeah. After a while, they put them in those buildings for a while, then they shipped them out.
Right. This was the assembly center to round them all up and then shipped from there to internment camps.
Right. In Colorado somewhere, they had different. And then some of those kids volunteered to go into the Army and fight in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of them went to fight in Europe.
The 442nd, very and decorated there.
The most decorated outfit in the Army.
That's correct.
And I knew some of them just at a distance. I remember that there were very few of them, and they were all hard workers, farming. Most of them were in farming. They tried real hard, and that was a raw deal. But there were some real good people.
So you quit school to work
right
after Pearl Harbor.
Uh-huh.
When did you realize that you were probably going to have to be a part of what was going on in this fight?
No, we thought the war would be over in a month. Yeah, yeah, we thought the war it was just going to be a temporary deal. Before I knew it, I turned 18, which was a year later, December the 15th, and then I went and registered, and in about 3 months I got my notice to show up in Fresno. And when we got there, they told us that we'd have a choice. If we passed the examinations and everything, we have a choice of what we want to go do. And when I got to my turn, I told them I'd have to go Navy. I never seen the ocean in my life. I didn't know what it was like that I was going to have to go to the Navy. When I went through, they said, okay. They passed me on through. And then at the other end of the line, here I meet a cousin that I hardly ever seen or talked to hardly. He was a little bit older than me, maybe a couple of years older than me. And I told him, where are you going, cousin? He said, I'm going Navy. How about you? He said, oh, I'm going Navy too. Okay, I said, well, we'll see you later. And we thought that was the end of the conversation. And next thing I knew, when they got through with me, they told me, go home, get your things ready, and come back in a week. And we went back in a week to Fresno, and they put it on a train, and there's my cousin again. Where are you going, cousin? He said, I'm going to Farragut, which is up in Idaho.
Yeah.
And we ended up together in the same boot camp, and we had about 100 men. I got a picture there. In 3 months from there, they sent us to San Francisco, to Treasure Island, and that's where they were getting the crew ready for the Reno. They had a crew of 750 men. From there, we went to school to the rifle range in Vallejo. So I guess they were 30-06, and then we went into the 40 millimeters and 20 millimeters, and the big guns, the 5-inch, were up at Half Moon Bay, and we had to go to Half Moon Bay and shoot the big guns, and they keep track of everything you did, you know. They put you where they wanted to. They knew where you did the best job. And then all of a sudden, the time to go board ship, my cousin's there, same outfit, same on the same turret.
Same gun crew.
Same gun
on
crew.
On this ship of 750, the
yeah.
gun crew that you're assigned to, your cousin's on that crew.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that?
Well, a million, I guess.
And they didn't do it on purpose?
No.
They didn't know you guys were cousins?
Yeah, we told them, they just kind of looked at us, you know, looked the other way. Like, you know, those days, too, there was a lot of kids that were lying about their age.
Right.
And they were 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And there were quite a few of them. You could look at their faces. There was young kids. They all ended up going, they would grab them. They wouldn't let them go home unless somebody complained. We had a kid that his sisters complained to the congressman or something back in Texas, and they found a kid aboard our ship.
Mm.
And he turned 18 16 when he went in. He lied about his age. And then people would sign for him.
Right.
The Navy would care less. Once you got in, they wanted you.
They needed bodies.
They needed bodies. They put you where they wanted to. And here it is, my cousin and I ended up in the same gun crew. I handled the powder and he handled the shell for the same gun. The whole crew on top, and then the 5-inch guns are up there on top. And that's the one that turns, it goes each way, you know, up
right.
and down. Well, we were the next step down. We had to get the powder from the, there'd be a hole coming out of the main deck. And you grab them and you put them on another shelf. And that would go to the guy that would throw it in the gun. There were quite a few people involved in there.
It's a big operation to get these giant shells.
Oh, yeah. My division had about 100 men, the first division. And we had 3 turrets in the front. We had plenty of help. And we'd sleep in a room about big as this, I guess, more or less. There were about 30 of us sleeping in there.
And you mentioned having your cousin on your crew.
Yeah.
You also had quite a few guys from your hometown. I mean, here's a ship of 750. How many guys from Merced on that ship?
9.
9 of you from this little town in California.
Yeah. And the one guy that, his name was Sid Johnson, he is in the engine room. He worked on the engines. And then we had another guy named S.V. Smith. He was on a 5-inch 30 cannon, too, like I was. They were scattered throughout the whole ship. Mm-hmm. Somewhere on the 20 millimeter, so nine of us scattered out. And then when we got hit that night, we got hit real bad. Was in the Philippines. The second time we got hit, I looked around. I found S.V. Smith right away, and I found my cousin. We were together. They wouldn't let us abandon ship. They made us clean the ship on one side. We throw everything over the side, and the other side we carry whatever we carry there to balance the ship.
Yeah, because it was listing.
Yeah.
So you guys got hit pretty bad, and I want to hear about all that.
Yeah.
But I'm interested first in what it was like. Here you said your whole world was within a 30 or 40-mile radius of Merced.
Yeah.
Now you're on this big cruiser, 750 men, and you're heading out to war. You're a teenager. What's going through your mind when you guys set sail from San Francisco?
We thought it was just a big, good time trip, you know. We thought it was fun and all that. We never worried about getting hit or losing any men, as far as that goes. And when we left San Francisco, another cruiser took us out. I think it was the Oakland. The Oakland was the same type of ship. We joined the fleet in the Pacific. But we never worried about it. You know who the guys that were mostly? Were the guys that were married.
Right.
The guys that were married, because we had, like our crew captain, his last name was Caps. He was afraid. Whenever we got into battle, you could see it, that he was worried. And sure, he knew that one mistake would be, basically, to get the powder kegs were about that big, and they had a primer. If you hit that primer, that'd be it.
It would explode.
Right in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
See? So, and we were kids. We didn't think nothing of it. We thought it was just a fun trip.
When did that change? What was that first moment where it became clear to you, hey, this is real and we could lose our lives?
I guess when we got hit, the first time we got hit, we didn't even feel it. I was in the front part of the ship, and the torpedo plane was empty, and it hit that turret in the back, and it came over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we got hit, but we didn't feel it. But when we got hit that night, in fact, it was about 2 weeks after the invasion of the Philippines. There were rumors that we had sunk all the Jap fleet, that the Jap fleet that were left were going to wait for us at the mainland. We didn't think nothing of it. And I was asleep. It was midnight. We got hit at 11:30 at night. And I was asleep when that ship shook like a fish out of water. Mm. It just shook and knocked me on the deck. Usually we'd get a warning when there was enemy nearby. We get a warning, and that night we didn't get no kind of warning, nothing. It just shook the ship out of the ground, out of the water, and I fell on the deck, and boy, everybody put their clothes on, and the captain called battle stations. He wouldn't abandon ship. Only one guy abandoned ship was a chief petty officer. He was on deck when we got hit, so he grabbed a raft.
Mm-hmm.
And threw it over the side. He went over the side. He was only one guy that went over the side.
But when they sound battle stations, they sound general quarters, so then you have to go to your 5-inch gun?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's still dark outside.
Oh, yeah, it was dark, and some of the lights were going off and on, some lights were off and on. We was about two decks below water, our living quarters. Everybody just found our way to our battle stations. You could go straight up or go down the road inside.
Mm-hmm. But was there anything to fire at?
No.
Because
no.
This was torpedoes from a submarine that had hit you.
Yeah. But the captain was the one that decided that, made that decision. He called battle stations, and he thought we'll get hit again. And then we heard that he turned down orders to abandon. He said he was going to take his ship home.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost 48 men that were in that area where the torpedo hit. So it took us about 3 days to get it stabilized in the water, and when we straighten it out, here comes a tugboat out of the Philippines, and I got pictures there of it, tightened up cables on there, and towed it all the way to the Marshall Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And we towed it at, I think it was 2 knots an hour, and we had towed all the way to the Marshall Islands, which was about 600 miles away at 2 miles an hour.
That's a slow journey.
Well, a slow journey, and we had four destroyers around us. And they picked up all the survivors. They made everybody abandon. You can see where they abandoned ship. They started picking them up the next day. And some guy wouldn't go over. You could look over the side of the ship, and you could see the sharks down there.
Mm.
They were going into the same hole that that the torpedo made.
The water was clear enough to see sharks swimming into the holes in your ship that the torpedoes had left.
We had them around us for days.
And the way a lot of the guys evacuated your ship was they had lines from your ship to these destroyers.
Right.
They'd jump in the water and then follow the line to the destroyer.
And a lot of guys didn't want to go over, and they'd grab them and throw them over.
Wow. But you didn't have to do it that way.
No.
Why not?
Me and my buddy Lino, our captain, we had a lieutenant, he put us on the tugboat. He put about 50 men on the tugboat so we could help out. Mm-hmm. And our job was, I remember, was we had axes to cut the cable loose if it starts sinking.
Ah.
If the arena would start sinking or get hit again, you had to get rid of it right away.
Well, that doesn't sound like a fun job. Your whole job is to be ready for something really disastrous.
Right.
And have to do something that probably would have been tough to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we was on there 24 hours. The first thing I did, I met the cook on the tugboat, and I started talking to him in Spanish, and him and I were buddies from there on. Yeah. And then we wanted to eat. Their guys had fresh eggs. They had fresh, good food compared to ours. Our food was mostly all powder.
Mm-hmm.
On the cruiser, everything was powder. The bread was powder, the milk, and everything was powder. And then they just threw a little bit of water, and that's what you ate. Because they gave enough food for 6 weeks. We'd go for 6 weeks without stopping.
Right.
And we had to carry food for 700 men.
It's time for our first break, but when we come back, we'll learn more about the USS Reno and just how fortunate that cruiser was to survive World War II. What does that mean for Al Peguero? Well, I'm sure you can imagine. Go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page to see what he looked like then and what he looks like now, and we'll be right back after this.